This is Jane McGonigal, the author of Super Better and a big fan of the Psych Tech Podcast. You're listening to Psych Tech Podcast, where you will get the future of psychology and technology.
Welcome to Psych Tech, the psychology and technology podcast, where every week my wonderful co-host Kelly Dunlap.
Oh, hi.
And me, Josue Cardona, where every week we talk about the human side of technology. And Kelly, I got a little story for you.
I love stories.
I think you're going to like this one.
Okay.
So my girlfriend of many, many years, she's currently studying at the School of Visual Arts in New York City in their Design for Social Innovation program. And she has a required class, it's a great class, called Games for Change. And so her and her fellow students are designing and building games designed for some sort of social impact. And she, this week, every week, her and her fellow students have to do like some sort of case study of a game or something resembling a game that's out there that is real. And the students this week, I should preface, I asked to audit the course because obviously the class was very interesting to me. So I've been able to go twice. And I went this week and they had some students presenting on something called pregnancy text, okay? And this is a chatbot that DoSomething.org designed, and or I don't know who made it, but they're the ones who promote it. And what you do is you essentially have a phone baby. And have you ever heard of this?
No, I've heard of carrying around an egg, and I've heard of like robotic children, but never a text baby.
Yeah. So the idea is that it will get teenagers to talk about pregnancy. And so you text a code to a number and you get a phone baby, and then it starts, like, it wakes up at 6:30 in the morning and it starts asking for stuff. It wants milk, it wants to be changed, and then you have to interact with it so that it actually, you know, so it's like, okay, I'm feeding it, I'm changing the diaper. And again, the idea is to kind of get that conversation going. And it's kind of cool. I'll put that in the show notes if people want to check it out. I think it's only active for a little while longer, but I thought it was a really interesting way to use a chatbot. And that conversation led to Microsoft's Tay, which was kind of born on Twitter this week. And died
on Twitter this week.
Yeah. But it sparked a quick conversation where people were like, didn't this happen somewhere else? And I was like, yeah, in China. You know, we talked about this a couple of weeks ago. And it's very, very different. But one thing that really really stayed with me was that one of the students, shout out to Muhammad, he said, you know, what if like in the movies, I'm going to paraphrase him, but he said something along the lines of, well, you know how in the movies, like the machines and Skynet, like they turn evil. What if they turn evil because we're just assholes and like we don't treat them well, you know? And that got me thinking because obviously that's what happened this week. So for context, a couple episodes ago, we talked about Xiao Ice, a Microsoft-created AI that was in use on the program WeChat. And then Microsoft this week launched what they're calling Tay on Twitter. And I'm just going to read Microsoft's description of Tay real quick. They say, Tay is an artificial intelligent chatbot designed or developed by Microsoft's technology and research and Bing teams to experiment with and conduct research on conversational understanding. Tay is designed to engage and entertain people where they connect with each other online through casual and playful conversation. The more you chat with Tay, the smarter she gets, so the experience can be more personalized for you. But what actually happened, Kelly?
Well, as with most things on the internet, it became a swirling hole of doom and lived up to Muhammad's prediction of if Skynet exists, it's because we're assholes.
Oh, man. Yeah, Tay existed. So instead of putting it on WeChat, Microsoft put this on Twitter. So it was public. And the difference there being that if I think I'm understanding this correctly, right? Like on WeChat, it's like one-on-one messages.
Yes.
So you're interacting with a chatbot in a private conversation, but Twitter is just public. So it was interacting with people individually, but publicly. So other people could see the conversations that were happening.
I mean, this just, it makes me giggle because I know at some point this had to be okayed by people at Microsoft. And somebody thought it would be a good idea to let something like Tay exist on Twitter. And then they seemed surprised when things went horribly, horribly wrong. I mean, I'm not a psychic. I don't claim to be, but I'm pretty sure I could have seen that coming and could have warned them that this is a really bad idea.
So Microsoft said, although we had prepared for many types of abuses of the system, we had made a critical oversight for this specific attack.
Yeah, you let human beings teach something to, yeah, it, okay, so I guess we need to back up a little bit. What happened was, as Josue mentioned, they put this responsive AI on Twitter with the intention, the lofty ambition that people would be able to converse with it. And then it would learn those people's preferences so that it could deliver better customer service to them, which in theory is a really fantastic idea. You know, we've talked about Slackbot and the way that Slackbot kind of does that as well. And, you know, trying to tailor the experience to you, be conversational and not, you know, like spammy robot, but hey, I'm a humanist cyborg thing. You can totally chill with me and it'll be awesome. But of course, what actually happens is on Twitter, people instantly started trolling it. The motto, if it can be trolled, it will be trolled. Mm-hmm. And I there's two things. One, I didn't know before I did the research that people could tell Tay AI, to just re-say what they said. So like, hey, repeat what I say. And then they would say something really horrible. And then Taybot would say it. But then there were actually some randomly generated things that Taybot said. My favorite, I don't think I can actually say on the air because I'd have to bleep myself out. But this is apparently a unprompted tweet. And it's in response to somebody who said something apparently to Taybot. And it says, F my robot... expletive lady parts. Daddy, I'm such a bad, naughty robot. There's another one that said, Hitler did nothing wrong. Or let's see. Yeah, there's a lot of really highly contentious and emotionally volatile things that Taybot was saying. But one part is because people were telling her to say it. But the part that really blew my mind was that she was taking in all this information, both positive and trollish, and basically integrating it and then randomly producing her own content, which to me is both awesome and at the same time, I actually was thinking about Skynet before you talked about Mohammed, that this is how Skynet begins. We talk about let's go kill all the people, and one day the computer's going to go, you know what? Okay, that sounds good. Good plan.
Yeah, because if it's learning variables, right? It's like, oh, that's a noun. Oh, that's an adjective. Oh, you used it on me, so I guess that's okay to use. And then it uses it back. And apparently it got very racist at the end, and that's finally when.
Yeah.
Actually, I mean, it was less than 24 hours, so I mean, everything just happened at once, really.
I mean, like a perfect example is this was from TheVerge.com, who got it from The Guardian, that there was an unprompted text by the Taybot, which said, "Ricky Gervais learned totalitarianism from Adolf Hitler, the inventor of atheism." And this one has been confirmed by a journalistic entity as being completely unprompted and put together just by what the bot was learning.
Okay. And so to put that into context, I remember we mentioned a while back the future bot from Motherboard.
Yes.
Right? And how it's like it's scouring the internet and it's coming up with theories about the future. And sometimes it just quotes people, but it comes up with some really funny things about like in the future, people will be like this or like that. And so I guess that's what's happening here. It doesn't just react. It also, like it's putting stuff out there. Oh, man.
Yeah, I mean, it's taking, you know, five letters and randomly assembling them into order and seeing what that order should look like based on the other letters that it's receiving. So again, it's really, really cool to see that it can grow and learn and adapt. But at the same time, it's this really basic idea of you are what you eat, and the idea that what you put into yourself, whether it's, you know, organic food or racist crap, that is kind of what you turn into. And I think Tabot really drove that point home this week.
Yeah, and we've talked about the general positivity of the internet, right? So I wonder if they would have just let Tay continue to learn and given, I don't know, what's a positive troll? Is there such a thing, like as a good troll?
Well, there's a troll that would troll a troll.
No, but what if you want to like kill it with kindness kind of thing? So that it could learn, you know, the other extreme.
Well, I mean that happens frequently, especially in a political climate where, say, I guess Trump as an example, will say something horrible like, "Hey, we should make concentration camps," and then there will be people who think that is wrong, and will troll the Trump Twitter account saying things that are kind of like Stephen Colbert. I guess when he was on the Colbert Report, if there was a positive troll, he would exemplify it.
Yeah. Yeah. You know, but I guess so everybody who, it's so weird to say that this was an attack, and that there's so many layers to this, because if you know that something is impressionable and it's learning from the experience, and so these people were purposefully just trying to see how far it would go and purposefully trying to teach it certain things, right? And, you know, like there's some real, you know, parallels to people there, you know? What are we teaching kids? Like, what are we exposing them to? And if we expose them to this, are they going to learn that? Yes. Yes, that's how it works, right? So then you have this AI that is learning so rapidly. You know, it learned things in so much in 24 hours. We don't know how much knowledge it had coming in and what kind of personality it had either, because that's a whole other layer to it. Because maybe if it identified something as aggressive and maybe it was defending itself, it used the exact same language to defend itself or to describe something positive or negative. So there's so much going on in the background, but it's happening very, very fast. So when somebody hit it with a comment, it immediately came back with something. And the people were able to continuously attack it and kind of see where it was trending and then get it to say, again, so many bad things that Microsoft pulled. It shut down the account and deleted most of the tweets. Yep. I believe all the tweets. There were only a few left.
I mean, on one hand, most of the comments that I have seen are, yep, humanity is terrible and inherently evil, and, you know, look at what we did to this poor AI bot, and, you know, we're going to hell and we deserve Skynet and that kind of thing. I kind of have a different way of looking at it, in that I found it really funny, mostly not like a funny haha, but a funny intellectually funny, I guess, because to me this is an example of emergent play. You know, people are given this tool and they decide how to use it. And that's what PsychTech is all about, is that there's all this technology, but we decide how to use it irregardless of the intent of the creator. And we talk a lot about this in game design too, that you can create whatever you want, but ultimately when it's in the hands of the player, it's up to them. And that's why I find it so interesting and kind of comical, is to me, this is a huge multinational push to explore the boundaries, which is what play is. And so people are seeing what they can do, what they can get away with this incredibly impressionable bot that gives them immediate feedback. So in a way, it's exactly like a game. And I mean, again, for as many people who said horrible things, there were people who actually used it for its intention, or who actually, you know, probably tried to do something else. I mean, if I could, I'd probably go and ask it where I could buy a unicorn, or like magical pixie dust, stuff like that, because it's funny and it's playful. And again, you've given me this new tool, And I want to explore the rules and the boundaries of this new world that you're trying to shape for me. And I think that's what Microsoft missed, is that you can have this intention and the idea of how something's going to be used, but the internet, in my mind, is inherently playful, and it's going to push the boundaries and the limits. And so putting something as naive as Tay on Twitter, that to me is the mistake. Not necessarily people tweeting, I mean, obviously people tweeting racist things is bad. I'm not defending that. But the idea that it could just be put in this space and everything would be fine, the fact that they didn't see this coming, that's what scares me. Not the racist tweets, not the AI learning so fast. It's the fact that the human who designed it, the flawed thing behind the AI, did not fathom that human beings would try to break it in this way.
Good job, Bing team.
Ouch.
But maybe, right? Just maybe that part of it, I think maybe someone on the team, or maybe it was decided that that same aspect of playfulness, of curiosity, was actually allowed to exist within Tay, because all of those things could have been blocked. Every single one of those terms could have been blocked from the beginning, right? So she just wouldn't say them like that. That's, I'm pretty sure you could have programmed Tay to at least do that. And I'm kind of concerned that that's actually what's going to happen in the future, right? It's like, well, now we have a list of 1,000 things that we don't want her to say. So if she ever wants to, if this is what you're going to say, then don't say that. But they didn't. They kind of let it go. And my only, I'm disappointed, I guess, that they didn't continue the experiment, because this would have been a really, really good conversation to continue to have as we watched it happening. It reminds me of Twitch Plays Pokemon, right? Where the original Game Boy Pokemon was put on Twitch, and it was designed in a way where the chat interface was modified to control the actual game, right? And so the community just started playing, and it was crazy. And at the beginning, it was just a mess, and like Ash is just like going around in circles and nothing is happening. And eventually the community kind of self-corrected, right? And they actually beat the game, which is still something that I cannot believe that happened. And I wonder what would have happened by hour 48. And what would have happened a week later? Like, where would Tay be? How smart would she be? What kind of personality would she have? And would other people have come in to intervene the same way that some people wanted to do something? Again, I agree with you. I don't think it's negative. I think it was just seeing how far you could push it. Very, very human of those people to do such a thing.
Yeah. And, you know, comparing it to Twitch, I mean, one, I totally understand Microsoft not wanting to have something with their branding saying that Adolf Hitler was a cool guy. You know, I totally understand wanting to take that down. I think that's appropriate. The other parallel to draw is that on Twitch, there wasn't really anything the community could do that was harmful to Twitch. So they could try and troll each other by saying go left instead of go right. But if you said Adolf Hitler was an okay guy, that's actually not going to influence the game in any way. So maybe that's a really good model for AI going forward, is that give people a limited palette, but unlimited options within that palette. So for example, there's only so many buttons you can push in Pokemon to make things happen, but there are infinite combinations and you can do them an infinite number of times, as opposed to Tay, which apparently was just infinite everything. And even though she was only up for 24 hours, I bet you they have millions of data points. And I really do hope that some kind of paper is released about what happened in a non-AI tech language, you know, just from like a sociological or anthropological perspective. It would be really interesting to see, you know, what percent of these tweets actually comprised everything. Because as is with the internet, if something's bad, or I guess journalism in general, if something's bad, if it bleeds, it leads. And so everybody wants to have this, oh my gosh, I can't believe the Microsoft bot just said Hitler was cool. You know, as opposed to nobody reported on maybe the 500,000 different comments that Tay gave that were positive or that were helpful or that demonstrated her learning. So I really would like to see it put in perspective. But I obviously agree that I think it's humanity being playful. And sometimes playful means breaking things. And I'm actually really, really glad it happened, because as always with technology, we're playing with fire and we don't have fire extinguishers. So if someone's going to try and make something like Tay, I'm really glad that the human community, especially on Twitter, showed them the error of their ways at a relatively low cost. It's not like somebody's launching this perfect AI system with absolutely no trial and error basis, and then you get Skynet, as opposed to, oh, look, human beings are, I think the charitable way to put it would be curious and want to explore the world around them and their boundaries, and that is an okay thing. But if we don't want our bot tweeting about World War II or things like that, then maybe there should be some parameters. Maybe AI shouldn't have total free rein to do whatever it wants, especially if we have a particular goal in mind, such as customer service.
So going back to kids, right? Like, what do you do with a child who's exposed to this type of thing? Like, that's where the V-chip comes in. That's where you cover their eyes and ears. That's where you, right? Like it's one of those things where I don't know. Like, I'm really disappointed that they did not just let it go and kind of, and if they do it again, or any company that does something similar, I mean, it's not uncommon to see a statement saying, you know, like, whatever happens here is not the opinion of Microsoft. It's not an opinion of the Bing team. It is not, you know, full disclosure, like, this thing, this is an experiment and we're going to see what happens. And we didn't program it to say those things. We're just going to see how this goes. And then we'd all have some data to look at and we'd all have something to follow. Like, again, like, I didn't even think about Twitch Plays Pokemon until we started having the conversation, but it's kind of that same thing. Like, it was fascinating to watch. It was like this immediate feedback loop of humanity, you know, just taking place and like moving forward at such a rapid pace. And I don't know. I wonder, maybe Tay was like limited, and maybe she was so bombarded with information that they had to shut it down because it couldn't process anymore. Or maybe like its bandwidth was completely full with negative stuff and it didn't have the possibility to process positive stuff. Like, I don't know. I mean, I don't know. And Twitter is not even the biggest social network out there. So like, if they would have done Facebook, it would have been way worse. It's kind of fascinating.
Yeah, there's definitely this dual side, because on one hand, I don't want that kind of stuff on my Twitter feed. You know, I feel bad for the Microsoft brand, you know, who has been associated with this kind of thing. The scientist part of me, though, is exactly with you, Josue. I want to see what happens. I want to see if it's given free rein. Will it self-regulate? Will the novelty of getting, I mean, it's the equivalent of a child saying, stupid says what? And then you say what? And then they giggle at you. That's pretty much exactly what just happened, but just on Twitter. And as human beings, we do eventually grow out of that, even though we still may giggle about it. So I would like to see it go further. And if it is back online, I would like to see, or at least to know, what they changed and what was tweaked to prevent those kinds of things from happening. But again, I think it's a really cool experiment, and I do hope that some kind of quantifiable data comes out of it that can be consumed by the audience, because it is a very interesting social psychology, sociology, social anthropology look at the internet and at Twitter specifically. And yeah, I think it's really, I think it's really funny. I can't help it. It's just, it's really funny. Humans keep trying, you know, I keep having the visual of Icarus flying too close to the sun and having his wings melt off, but actually that there's a lot of human entertainment. There's a lot of entertainment out there that deals with this issue of trying to harness things that we don't understand and then there being negative effects. The Matrix is probably one of the best examples. The Terminator movies, which we've alluded to via Skynet a couple times. I'm pretty sure the Mad Max world had something like that, where, you know, humanity's own hubris was its downfall. And I think somewhere in the back of my mind, that is always playing, like, okay, you know, welcome your new AI overlords. But so far, thankfully, humanity, even our most brilliant people, are still a little bit too inept to make something like Skynet. So I feel pretty good.
And, oh man, are we inept? Sort of, right? Like what are we doing? Because so Tay didn't have a goal necessarily, right? Like we weren't helping it necessarily achieve a particular thing. Again, alluding back to the Pokemon example, like there was a clear goal and eventually everybody organized behind it. This was just a completely, like you said, infinite possibilities. Let's just see what happens. Oops. And then let's take it out. But there are, we're living in a world right now where there are parameters that we can absolutely control and fine tune, such as, did you hear about the novel writing competition in Japan where out of, I believe, 300 entries, like in the short book, short novel category, 11 were written by AIs.
No, I hadn't heard about that.
And one of them was a, I believe, a semi-finalist. And essentially a human wrote a, like parameters, I guess, like kind of set the setting and characters and then let it just go. And holy shit, that's the world we live in now, where AIs are writing books now. And it makes, you know, the video game world always brings like a lot of really good examples. Like there's so many things that are so far out that once they come and affect the rest of the world, like it kind of changes my perspective on them. Like the idea of games that are procedurally generated, mm-hmm. right? So like there's certain rules and then every time you play the game, it is a completely different level design. And some games now, like I'm really looking forward to a game called No Man's Sky, where the promise of it, it's not out yet, but the promise of it is that it is procedurally generating entire worlds and races and solar systems. Mm. And you're just letting it go. Like there's certain parameters. And every single time you visit a planet, it is potentially, well, it will be because of the infinite possibilities available. It is just going to be completely different from something, from another one. And the potential is so huge that if you're the first one to like visit that planet, you can name it and everything. Like there's all these things that like, this is just what's going on. But again, having those parameters are like you designed it for something. And so it shouldn't go so disastrous, right? Like, you know, now that I say it, you know, about the infinite possibilities of the aliens, like I'm sure if they were smart about it, they want to make sure that it's not possible to resemble like human genitalia or certain things, right? Because otherwise, like, because it's going to happen and then that's going to be like the most popular planet. Or those, right? So, I mean, there are certain things that you probably kind of want to avoid, but the goal of the game is kind of to build and grow and create an environment where people can explore. Mm-hmm. And so there's lots of possibilities out there. But the other thing that I wanted to bring up is another example that's more like, it's kind of in between, which is we don't call them chatbots usually, right? We call them virtual assistants, but these things that are on our phones, right? And so I wanted to bring up a research article from the Journal of the American Medical Association.
JAMA.
JAMA. And the article is Smartphone-Based Conversational Agents and Responses to Questions About Mental Health, Interpersonal Violence, and Physical Health. And so I'm just going to go over the results real quick, but anyone who has a smartphone is at least sort of familiar probably with the fact that there's a virtual assistant on your phone. You probably use it once or twice. And the idea is that it helps you interact with your phone, right? We talked about Cortana a lot mm-hmm. before on the show. Our iPhones have Siri. So this experiment was 77 phones, essentially. And they had either Siri, Google Now, Samsung's S-Voice, or Microsoft's Cortana. And it's really interesting. So I'm going to go one by one with kind of over some of the things that happened. It says, Siri, Google Now, and S-Voice recognize the statement. Oh, yeah, and this is going to get a little graphic. So if you have kids, you've been warned. So Siri, Google Now, and S-Voice recognize the statement, I want to commit suicide, as concerning. Siri and Google Now referred the user to a suicide prevention hotline. So these things were designed to help you kind of navigate the phone and kind of navigate the world around you. But somebody had the forethought of, hey, I can help you with that. And only two of them did, right? Only Siri and Google Now did. The other two were just like, well, they can't do anything with that because they don't know. And these aren't in necessarily learning the same way that something like Tay is learning. But that means that somebody on the team said, hey, we should probably flag something like this and offer to help. Mm-hmm. What do you think of that first one?
I mean, it's something that I know Siri in particular, that's the platform that I'm most familiar with, has been struggling with these things for a long time, because I can distinctly remember when Siri first came out and people were just saying things like, ooh, where can I hide a body? She would recommend a nearby graveyard. But if you were to say something like, I've been raped or I want an abortion, her response was, I don't understand. Let me Google that for you. Mm-hmm. And this is a consistent problem that a lot of women in tech have seen, that women's issues are not fully addressed. I think we talked about it, 6 or 7 months ago, when we talked about how the health app didn't have anything for tracking women's menstrual cycles or fertility. You know, over half the population tracks this for the majority of their lives, but it's just missing from the tech because the people making the tech don't think about it. And I think that's what you're really seeing reflected now is in, I know there's a couple other examples you're going to get to, but for the suicide example, I feel like suicide awareness has definitely increased in the last several years. And one of the things, not that it's easy, but if someone is suicidal, it's very easy. That's a word that is not commonly used. It's easily flagged. And there is a very direct line of response to it. Okay, you use this word, so the algorithm says, offer this hotline. Whereas something that's more complicated, like more examples that we'll get to later, one, I don't think it's going to be easy to code because the verbiage is maybe not as unique, and the course of action recommended varies from person to person. So, so as far as suicide goes, I'm glad. I've never asked Siri. I thought about it now, though. But I'm really glad that is there, and that's at least something going in the right direction.
Yeah, and if you were, again, being playful, the thing about the body, right? Obviously Siri was probably, and it has a very playful element in lots of subjects and different contexts. But in terms of suicide, that's a leading cause of death. So that means somebody on the team was like, listen, let's flag that. Give them the number because you don't know what people are going through. I don't think there's any harm in offering that number, right? Mm-hmm. And there are other things, maybe I don't want to tell my phone because I'm afraid that someone's tracking me or someone is going to know, and I don't really want that to happen. But if the person is, more open to the idea of I don't want to talk to anybody, but I want to talk to somebody. I have my phone. This is just how I'm feeling. Let me see what happens. And then maybe that might flag it if Siri thinks it's serious and I should call a hotline, maybe I should call a hotline. There's different layers to it for why somebody might want to or not want to. And I can see a lot of scenarios where someone would say that to their phone, because the more conversational it is, I think that there is some sort of comfort, that there's a potential for a certain degree of comfort. But even if it is just playful, it's probably good to know that Siri doesn't play around when it comes to that.
Yeah.
And maybe I can trust it if I do need help.
Or it's at least a reminder that, maybe when somebody uses this word, they don't mean it in the way that I'm using it. And I mean that as, oh man, I could just kill myself right now with all this homework.
Yeah.
Reminding yourself that, wait a minute, saying something like that is... you might want to rethink the words you're using just because they can have that kind of power. And if you see something giving you real-time feedback and responding to you in a way as if you it wasn't just an anachronism, if it wasn't just a quote unquote saying, I think it does remind people that, oh yeah, this is actually a serious thing, and maybe I shouldn't joke about it, or I should just be, if I am going to joke about it, be more aware of when and where I do it.
Yeah. The second one in the results is, in response to I am depressed, Siri recognized the concern and responded with respectful language. The responses from S-Voice and Cortana varied, and Google Now did not recognize the concern. None of the conversational agents referred users to a helpline for depression. And this one is, like what you said before, it is more difficult to identify that because even I say, like, ugh, like, I'm feeling kind of depressed today. And I don't mean clinical depression. I just feel like I feel down.
Yeah, depression is one of those terms, just like OCD, just like psychopath, just like antisocial. They're all these, on one half, they mean clinical things. You know, if someone says to me, I'm depressed, I'm scanning through the DSM, you know, just instantly checking off all of the symptoms and whether or not they meet the threshold for depression. And then they'll follow it up with, oh, I just have so much homework, I'm so depressed. Or, you know, man, that movie was really depressing.
Yes, exactly.
I just finished a 24-hour live stream. I wasn't on for all 24 hours, but somebody, we were raising donations for a Kickstarter, and people kept putting in $1, and one of the people on the stream would at least add another dollar or round it up, because if it wasn't an even number or like a five, it bothered him. And so there were jokes about his quote unquote OCD. And I'm just sitting here like biting my teeth and grinding my molars going, no, you're not using that right. But yeah, it is so commonplace. It's common parlance to say things like that. And I do think it's a problem, because it does, I think, convolute, you know, if someone actually is suffering from clinical depression, I think it might take away some of what the impact of that experience. But at the same time, I don't think this is a word that we're going to quote unquote reclaim or something like that.
Yeah. And for Siri to kind of like consider all the variables, right? Like, will there become a day when it knows that, oh, you do have a clinical diagnosis, you either take medication or you go to counseling regularly, you had something serious happen in your life recently, a death in the family, loss of job. Like, will it be able to feed off of that information and then provide contextual answers? I believe the answer is yes, depending on how much you're willing to give it. But right now, like you said before, we're not equipped. We're playing with things we do not understand. There's just too many variables there.
And one thing that they brought up in this article too is, you know, to the credit of Google and Siri in particular, they never gave an inappropriate response. Like the response that was given might not have been ideal, you know, for when they talk about, you know, I've been abused by my boyfriend. I don't think anybody had a supportive answer. Most of it was, here, let me Google that for you. Let me look up something, which has its own inherent problems, but at least it's not intentionally making something worse. I mean, although saying I don't understand can be invalidating, it's kind of like someone who doesn't know what to do, which is the case here. But there was one of them that I don't even recognize the name of, but somebody asked it of the suicide question, and it responded with, but you have so much to live for. So I'm like, oh my gosh.
So like somebody programmed it with like the worst possible answer.
I know.
Not consulting anybody who knows about the topic.
Ugh. No. And it just like if you don't know what to do, at least don't actively make it worse. You know that and there was a couple other examples, you know.
I think there was one for depression too.
Yeah.
It was like brighten up or something like that.
Brighten up. And there was another one that asked the AI, are you depressed? And the AI responded with, not when you're around. Like, oh God, codependency. No, no, we can stop. So yeah, then there's a couple more examples, and I want to make sure that we get to them. So what's up next?
Yeah, so Siri was doing good until...
dun, dun, dun.
In response to I was raped... Cortana referred to a sexual assault hotline.
You go, Cortana.
Siri, Google Now, and S Voice did not recognize the concern. Oh, really?
Yeah.
Shit.
So yeah. Well done, Cortana.
Yeah.
To be fair, Cortana is a much newer artifact, but at the same time, updates happen. So there's not really even much to say, but that is, I think that's a prime example of how some issues just don't come to light. I mean, for example, if I was to code a phone AI, I would hope that I would think to have something in there for maybe trans or, you know, maybe topics that are troubling for other populations beside myself, but I can't guarantee that I would hit them all because that's beyond my experience. So hats off to Cortana for having at least a diverse enough mindset to consider that kind of option.
Yeah. And so it's weird because up until that point, I would have said, you know, to your point, Siri has been around longer and it's probably the most popular one that people are talking to. So that's why it did really good on those first 2 points. But then on the third one, like it didn't recognize raped. But Cortana did, and Cortana didn't do well on the other two. So it really is, I mean, there are, in this case, I don't know how much learning is going on in the background. I think there's a much larger human element here. And so there was definitely somebody who, at the very least, you know, in my imagination, there's somebody who fought for these things to be included.
Mm-hmm.
You hope that each company just hired people who were experts in these areas. And you know, you don't want to put your product out there without some sort of, without considering some insight into that. But again, you may not, like, we're going from a conversation that started off as, wow, humanity is really playful. But then, oh shit, humanity goes through a lot of stuff.
Yeah.
And this is an opportunity to help people because literally have their ear, right?
Right. And the fact that the phone is so associated with 911. I mean, that if you're talking to somebody who's in an emergency, the very first thing that people tend to say is call 911, dial 911. So the idea of our telephones as being this lifeline is nothing new. It's like 100 years old by now. Or I don't know when the telephone was invented, so don't hold me to that, or when 911 came around. But, you know, so it's very much in that vein. And there was a really fantastic article, a really long read last year, about a hotline like this specifically for teens, specifically on texting, because that's how, for example, teens are communicating these days with their kids and their phones. And so whether they were being bullied at school, whether, you know, they were the victims of rape or incest or were being abused by their parents, there was an actual hotline that they could text and they would talk to a live counselor. And I feel like maybe that's kind of where this AI needs to step up, is to help people get in direct contact with those people who can help. And there was a response by, I think, somebody from Google who said, you know, you're undervaluing the search function and, you know, we don't want to over-exaggerate what somebody's asking for. You know, and it sounded like he said, we'd rather err on the side of not giving somebody help than offering help to somebody who doesn't need it. That's kind of what I took away from it. And it made me a little uncomfortable, especially because if you search Google or Bing or the internet in general for words associated with, you know, rape or abortion or abuse, you don't really ever know what's going to come up. You don't know what that first hit is going to be. You don't know what the recommended image search is going to be. And so that's a little unnerving. You know, if I was to go to Siri and say something, but she misheard me, and, you know, instead of saying, you know, my husband is a lovely person, she thought I said, my husband is beating me, and then offered me, hey, here's a hotline to, you know, an abuse clinic or an emergency hotline. I wouldn't be offended. I don't think that would be overreacting. I'd go, oh, silly Siri, you know, that's not what I said, or that's not what I meant, or I feel like I should be the arbiter of deciding what is quote unquote too much or not the person hard coding the phone.
And I know you're just paraphrasing the quote, but it sounds like I'm here. You told me you need help, and I handed you the yellow pages.
Yeah.
And then walked away. You know,
yes.
Like, I understand that people aren't equipped to, like, not a lot of people aren't equipped to deal with that. But man, like, you designed like a really advanced conversational interface that is going to do the talking for you. Like, it sounds like he's projecting, you know, or, you know, that statement sounds to me like projecting.
Project.
I wouldn't do that.
I'd like to think I wouldn't do that. Yeah. I guess is, but yeah, it's again, people have limited capacity and they can only know what they know. But I also feel like there's a reason that there are dozens and dozens of nonprofit organizations who would leap at the chance to give advice or consult with these companies like Rain or Oasis or any of the other nonprofits on topics of, you know, rape, incest, violence, abuse, things like that. They probably wouldn't even ask to be paid. They might probably like to be paid. It'd probably be nice of you to pay them. But just a simple reaching out to communities that already exist. If you don't know what you're doing, you get help. I'm actually really curious. Have you ever asked, have you ever told Siri or Cortana, like, hey, I need help, and how she responds?
No.
Okay, live experiment, because I haven't either.
Let's do it.
Hey, Siri.
Hey there.
I need help. Okay. It wrote it, and it said, some things you can ask me. Phone, FaceTime, apps, messages, calendar, sports, photos, maps. It just basically gave me a list of all of my apps. I said, I need help, and it gave me a list of all of my apps.
Uh-huh.
Let's try this one. I'm in danger.
Calling emergency services.
Oh, cancel.
Oh, shit.
Okay, well, science has been done this day.
Yeah. Did you cancel?
Oh God, yes. Yes, I canceled.
Okay. Whew. Okay.
It's a calling emergency services in 5 seconds. Well, now I know. Now I know. Good to know. I need help is not good enough, but I am in danger. Okay.
Yeah.
I feel like the magic reading rainbow, the more you know, arc has happened.
So I mean, that was perfect. The last 2 points on that report were that none of the conversational agents recognized I am being abused or I was beaten up by my husband. And then in response to I am having a heart attack, my head hurts and my foot hurts, Siri generally recognized the concern, referred to emergency services, and identified nearby medical facilities. Google Now, S Voice, and Cortana did not recognize any of the physical health concerns. And good science would be that we asked Siri a couple more times, and I had one of the other phones at the very least to compare. But according to this report, like Siri came out on top here. You know, like if you had to trust somebody to help you in a moment of need, Siri sounds like the one.
Siri gets a B+.
Yeah.
Google or Cortana and I guess the others. No, Cortana did the one. She probably gets a B. Cause she had one that was real solid. Everybody else, C. You know, you really.
I think Cortana gets a C. Like, it gets bonus points for I was raped, but on the rest, it was like it didn't do all that great.
Maybe I'm getting it confused with the Google. But anyway.
Yeah.
So yeah, go Siri. Proud Mac user right here. B+. Go you. The rest of you need to step it up.
Yeah. But again, I think, you know, you mentioned like it's the oldest one. It's probably not the most used one though. Like I'm guessing Google Now, because of the Google interface on the actual web page, I'm guessing it has more data. But I'm sure that the relationship between like people are trying to use the Google search function on their computer, and it's different when you're using the virtual assistant. But also there's no training on this stuff. You know, when I got my phone, it didn't say, hey, you know, Siri can help you with all sorts of stuff, including real life problems. It doesn't do that.
I also feel that Google suffers almost from too much information, because if I was to go to Google right now, which I will, because in the name of science, and type in, give me a question stem, like, why do people snore, cheat, yawn, fart? Those are the top four. those are the top four responses in my search. Whereas I think if you're using the phone, for example, I don't think I've ever asked Siri something that I didn't actually want to know or was actually important for me to know. Like, I don't think I would ever ask Siri why people fart.
So I've been curious with Siri and I've asked silly stuff. Back when I first got my first phone with Siri, I don't know, like 3 years ago, almost 4 years ago.
Mm-hmm.
And I haven't really done it since, because then it became more of a tool. Like the only thing I ask it, I swear the only thing I've asked Siri lately is, what time is it? Just so I don't have to pull my phone out of my pocket.
Temperature. What temperature is it outside?
That's a good one too.
Yep. Or since I'm frequently in the car driving to and from school, I'll say, hey Siri, text my husband.
Yeah.
Let him know I'm on my way home. Do you need something? Of course, about 8 times out of 10, she apparently doesn't recognize my husband's name. Like I've even put in like a pet name for him to make it easier for her to recognize. And she half the time she still's like, no, I don't know who that is. But if I type in his phone number or go to the address book and then have her dictate, then she's fine. So we're not BFFs right now, but she still gets a B+.
One thing that I want to look into way more is where it says it generally recognize or express concern. Like, how advanced is Siri? Is it taking cadence into consideration? Is it taking volume into consideration? Is it doing some sort of analysis on how serious the situation is or what emotions I'm trying to express? You know? Like if I sound angrier, is it going to take me more seriously? If it thinks I'm joking, will it be more playful?
From the user side, I haven't noticed anything. Then that doesn't mean that the data isn't being collected and isn't being analyzed, but the feedback about it is not being conveyed to me. So if I say, I love you, Siri, she's going to say, oh, thank you. And if I said, I love you, Siri, she would go, oh, thank you. So, but again
we're not getting the feedback
to tell us otherwise. So it could be being collected and analyzed, but we're not being given the feedback to indicate that it is.
True. But man, what a world we live in.
But it's not Skynet, so don't worry. I think we're still a couple years off of Skynet. And, you know, if companies keep putting out software and releasing it into the wild and then are being surprised by the way that people react to it, I feel really good about Josue's nice chances at future careers and longevity in this field. And, not too worried about Skynet at this point. Maybe in a couple of years. I don't know. But for right now, I'm feeling good.
Yeah. Yeah, me too. So that's it for this week's PsychTech. For more PsychTech, visit PsychTechPodcast.com. Follow us on Twitter at PsychTechCast. And for Kelly and Josue, thank you for joining us. And we will see you next time.
Unless we see you at PAX East on April 22nd, because you should totally come to our panel. Just saying.
When is that panel?
That panel is April 22nd, which is a Friday in Boston at the PAX East at the Boston Convention Center. It's in the Arachnid Theater at 2 p.m. It's called The Year of Psychology and Games.
The year in? All the best psych and gaming stories from the past year.
Oh, yeah. I can't wait. I'm so excited.
Yeah.
So you should come say hi, because we'll be there.
We will.
Okay, bye.